It is Wednesday, July 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Chinese stocks continue to plunge.
I also think there's a bigger threat from damage to the government's image as well as to the reform program. Boosting the stock market was seen as part of China's economic reforms.
A Pakistani doctor finds her life's work treating patients in New York City. And singer Demi Lovato has some cool sounds for summer. It's all ahead. China's benchmark stock index plunged nearly 6% in Wednesday trading despite weeks of government efforts, including an interest rate cut, to stem a slide in equities that began in mid-June. It's resulted in a loss of more than 30%, equivalent to wiping out more than $3 trillion in market value. The Shenzhen Composite Index lost 2.5% Wednesday. Other major Asian markets in Hong Kong, Tokyo, and Sydney closed lower. Hundreds of Chinese companies, about half the 2,800 listed firms, simply stopped trading shares, while the Chinese government told large state-owned firms to buy shares, raise the level of equities insurance companies can hold, and pledged more credit to foster trading. Tim Condon, chief economist at ING Singapore, tells International Edition's Victor Beattie he thought previous government intervention would have halted the slide in stock values, but so far it hasn't worked, and the government is struggling to find the right combination of actions to implement before, in his words, the correction in the market burns itself out with further losses. And he's concerned the continuing downward spiral poses a threat to the Chinese economy, the world's second largest.
Growth was already weak in the second quarter, but it did look like it was it bottomed out and was going to pick up a bit in the third quarter. This would threaten that outlook. I think a huge crash in the stock market could dampen consumer sentiment. China's stock market is a retail-driven market, and depressed consumer sentiment might spill over into weaker spending, and that would threaten the growth target. I also think there's a bigger threat from damage to the government's image as well as to the reform program. Boosting the stock market was seen as part of China's economic reforms. They needed to substitute capital market financing for shadow bank financing. Part of that meant the stock market would be in play. That obviously is not going to happen if the market crashes. Opening up the stock market to foreign investors was part of China's approach to internationalizing its currency. Obviously, that would be at risk as well. So, and the government's image. I think you've got an image of a government that has really been effective at implementing its objectives and policies. And to have this happen, and to have a lot of mom and pop investors upset would be unwelcome.
Knowing what you know now and given your expertise, how long does this downward spiral continue?
I wouldn't want to put a time frame on it, but given that we're falling somewhere between 5% and 10% a day, I guess the math is pretty easy to do. If they're just going to let it burn out, I think a fair level for the Shanghai Composite Index it would burn itself out around 2,000. There is obviously the hope that the authorities, in their struggling to put together a package, come up with the right one, and it the panic ends well before that. So I guess I would that would be the way I'd answer your question.
Well, it reached a high of over 5,000. That's a loss of over 50%.
Yes, you've wiped out market capitalization equivalent to almost 30% of GDP in the last, a little over 3 weeks. So, obviously, that's only about a third of the total increase in market capitalization that occurred from the beginning of the rally, which I would put at the end of November, which was when the People's Bank began to cut interest rates. It was when the market really took off, and so you had a huge run up, and now you've had a huge correction. So for some of these companies, not the highly speculative ones, but the blue chip names in China, they're at levels now where the downside probably is limited, that they look attractive at these valuations. But I think it's very hard to convince people to get into a market that is falling and is subject to the kind of swings that we've seen in China for the last really 3 weeks.
That's Tim Condon of ING Singapore. VOA correspondent Steve Herman reports from Bangkok on the tumultuous day for Chinese stocks.
The measures halting trading on many stocks has made it difficult to gauge how many investors are trying to offload shares. But China's security regulator, which has pledged to shore up the market, is warning of irrational selling. Francis Chung is head of China and Hong Kong strategy for CLSA, Asia Pacific Markets.
The big problem in China right now is there's only sellers, there's no buyers.
In Hong Kong, where nearly 800 mainland companies are listed, the Hang Seng Index plunged to close more than 5.8% lower. The People's Bank of China says it is watching markets closely and will guard against systemic regional financial risks. CSLA's Chung tells VOA he is certain China's government will escalate stock purchases until it can stabilize the market.
I do believe the government has the firepower to do so. The question is, what level do we stabilize?
Some market observers predict that China equities turmoil could emerge as a bigger risk to the global economy than the Eurozone crisis. Roger Tan, CEO of Voyage Research in Singapore, points out China's markets are dominated by unsophisticated individual investors who account for about 85% of trading and are now getting a painful lesson.
If you don't manage your risk properly, then you get burned, and some of them get burned very, very badly. And I do hear of a lot of stories that a lot of investors have been burned badly. Half of their savings, if not all of their savings, have been wiped out.
The China market crash on Wednesday has seriously worried investors across Asia who had been more focused the past week on the ongoing Greek financial crisis. Japan's benchmark Nikkei 225 index fell nearly 640 points to close down more than 3%, its largest single-day drop in more than a year. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's happening today?
Well, I want to start with a story right here from VOA from our own Doug Bernard. It's about the Agency for Internet Studies, or AIS. This is an agency in Russia. And we're getting a glimpse into this agency because a woman is suing them in Russia, actually sued them and settled out of court. And so Doug reports the AIS, he says, is a round-the-clock operation that employs about 300 workers. And what they do is they go online and they create fake social media accounts, and they basically just push out pro-Russia messages and kind of what they call AstroTurf. They have grassroots, which are organic kind of growth on social media, and then this AstroTurf, where it's kind of fake. So these people are going online, posting these pro-Russia messages, pretending to be actual, just regular people, but they're actually kind of an arm of the government. So it's this interesting look at what Doug calls a troll factory in Russia and how they're using social media to push out their message and trying to make it organic when, in fact, it's not. So that's been an interesting story, and that's on voanews.com. If people want to read the full story, I encourage them to. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I read it a bit earlier. It's fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And Russia is not the only country that's doing this. There are many more that are starting to do this now and see the power of social media, so it's only going to grow for sure. Another story out of Russia. The Russian government is warning about death by selfie. They put out this brochure, and they're encouraging the country, especially the country's young people, not to take selfies, you know, when you hold your camera phone up and you try to get yourself in a picture in some dangerous places. And this is actually based on some true things that have happened. A young woman died while she was on train track. She was trying to take a selfie. She got hit by a train. There are other people that get too close to animals or live wires, and they end up getting seriously hurt or killed. So the spokesperson there said the chase for likes in social networks can lead to the road of death. So dire warning from Russia, and important to always keep safe on social media for sure as we're using it.
Absolutely. Not worth it.
Yeah. And then briefly, there's a minor change on Facebook, but one that's a step towards gender equality. Facebook has changed the logo on their page. It used to be a man and a woman silhouetted. The woman was standing behind the man in the logo. Now the woman is in the middle, flanked by two of her friends. Caitlin Winner, who is the designer at Facebook, said it's a small step towards gender equality and their small way of showing support for women.
Very interesting. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute. NASA's New Horizons spacecraft, currently in the far reaches of the solar system, recently gave the space agency a bit of a scare. They say that the spacecraft experienced an anomaly on July 4th that led to a loss of communication between it and its controllers on Earth. The space agency says the problem has been resolved and that the New Horizons spacecraft has returned to normal science operations and is on target for its July 14th close flyby of Pluto. The glitch that forced the New Horizons to switch from its main to its backup computer was caused by a hard-to-detect timing error in the spacecraft's command sequence. But NASA says that the close brush with Pluto is on track and will proceed as originally planned. The New Horizons mission will allow us, for the first time, to get a close look at Pluto and its moons. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll have some new sounds from singer Demi Lovato. Well, guess who just popped into our New York studio, but International Edition's Adam Phillips. Adam regularly profiles the Big Apple's immigrant community. So, Adam, who's your subject today?
Well, today we're going to meet Pakistan-born Dr. Asmal Jamil Sadiq. She came to America nearly 30 years ago on a residency at Harlem Hospital. She specializes in pediatrics. And since that time, she's become a real go-to expert for child development and stays incredibly busy with the community, working with the Cordoba Initiative, promoting interfaith and cross-cultural understanding. And she also travels back home to Pakistan very frequently to lecture on medicine, armed with all the great knowledge she's gained here in New York. Dr. Sadiq began our conversation by telling me what moved her to practice pediatrics thousands of kilometers and a world away from her native Karachi.
I was very interested in self-esteem. I said I wanted to immunize children to feel good about themselves, and I worked in a program with mothers on crack and working with their children so they could get those children back, and it was called Reality House. And I found this work very enriching and humbling, because the kind of challenges people have to deal with and the heartbreak and where the resilience and strength comes from. And for myself doing this work, I just leaned deeper into my own spiritual essence or connections. I listened to a lot of Qawwali music.
Qawwali music?
It's a kind of spiritual music. It's Sufi in the sense that it is a spiritual practice. It's become very modern. It has its rock and roll, jazz, soul component to it with a lot of poetry, whether it's Persian, Punjabi, something I grew up with. So I wasn't doing it as a spiritual practice. It just connected me to my family and my roots. And I found it so healing because it is a spiritual message of divine love. Plus, it's fun. It just made me very happy and high, and I wanted to share it with everybody.
Is there a connection between the diverse way and open-mindedness that you were raised with in Pakistan and the world of New York and America and all the diversity you found here?
New York very easily felt like home because of just the way New York is, the excitement of people around and the connectedness in so many ways. And I grew up like that in Karachi. I have a sister-in-law who's Christian. I have an aunt who's Jewish. My sister went off to India and married somebody who was half Muslim, half Hindu, as far as the parents were concerned. So there was a lot of openness in my particular family. And New York just has an energy. And I bloomed and blossomed here. Yeah. I've had a lot of fun being here, but it's had its challenges as well.
Tell me about some of the challenges. That's very important to bring out, just as an immigrant.
There's a lot more connection growing up in the East. Here you have to build it. You can easily get very isolated. You're pretty much on a treadmill to find people who will love the kind of music I love or the food I love. That's what deeply nourishes me, finding that resonance.
How would you recommend immigrants who might be hearing this, or people who want to become immigrants, how would you recommend that they approach embracing it here but staying firmly rooted in their place of origin?
Well, you know, it's like being true to both, holding on to some of the stuff that you love, but also introducing it to the people you meet. Similarly, learning from others. You cannot just hold on to your roots and not grow where the sun is. You have to develop new branches and expand and connect. So, you know, it's like nourishing your roots, but be willing to grow towards the light.
So you have to come here to come home?
You know, that's true. I think I'm home wherever. It's where the heart is, and my heart is here right now. And it's also still in Pakistan and in India. And, you know, it's really anywhere where there's love and acceptance and joy.
Well, Adam, thanks for introducing us to Dr. Asma Jamil Sadiq. And all of us here wish her continued success.
Me too. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure, as usual, talking to you, Sarah. Talk to you soon.
Okay. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Singer Demi Lovato started her career with Disney, and she has several chart-scoring songs to her credit. She's also battled addiction, been diagnosed as bipolar, and been outspoken on gay rights issues. Now music is once more playing a big role with a new single called Cool for the Summer. International Edition's David Byrd and Larry London are here to talk about it.
She's got a hot new tune out. It's called Cool for the Summer. She took a little spill when she was promoting it over the holiday weekend. Who am I talking about? Demi Lovato. Larry London joins me in the studio. Larry, Demi has got a new song out. And a couple of weeks ago, you and I were talking about whether something would be voted Song of the Summer. But this is Cool for the Summer. And tell me about this.
Well, this single is coming up from her fifth album, which she is still working on and is yet to be titled, but she says it's a great, fun, happy, upbeat summer song. And as you mentioned, she did fall down during a performance in Los Angeles, which has gotten a lot of attention on social media. And, you know, of course, you should never do something like that when you're at the poolside in high heels.
Yeah, the heels she was wearing. I looked at a photograph, and I think it was in Rolling Stone. The heels she was wearing were almost 12 centimeters, and they were bright yellow.
I think
big,
she learned
huge
a lesson.
Platform heels. And it wasn't like she was doing anything extraordinary. She just moved, and because she's on a plexiglass pool deck above a pool full of people, her fans, and she just slipped and
right.
fell. But in the days of everyone having a smartphone, it's all over YouTube.
It's everywhere.
And so she, to her credit, made the most of it, saying, well, that's definitely how not to be cool for the summer. But then she jumped right into this pool full of fans.
Tell me what you want, what you like, it's okay. I'm a little curious, too. Tell me if it's wrong, if it's right, I don't care. I can keep a secret, kid.
Well, she's a cool person. I met her and I spoke to her. She was on Border Crossing. She's a great person. She's involved with many great causes which are near and dear to her, like equality in marriage. And she's also outspoken for lesbian and gay rights. And she talks about depression because she herself had undergone therapy for a number of issues a few years ago. And so she's very, very much behind these causes, and she's not afraid or ashamed to speak out about them. So she's doing that. She's launched her own charity foundations around these different social issues. And on top of that, she manages to find time for film and music. She's going to replace Katy Perry in the upcoming Get Smurfy movie. She's going to be Smurfette, which is a character that Katy Perry had been, and she's also working on her fifth album, as I mentioned.
Now, this song, Cool for the Summer, this is, shall we say, a little warm, kind of hotter than July. There's some lyrics in this that, you know, I can just see the record label people going, oh, no. What is she talking about?
Well, you know, we're all excited about the new album because she is, you know, taking a different direction, she said, with the new album. It'll be very 80s flavored, and that seems to be, you know, the flavor of the day, because it seems like a lot of artists are going in that direction. So we're looking forward to that. She said, you know, this particular song, Cool for the Summer, combines sounds that you recognize from other artists, and it's a very upbeat, very happy song.
All right, well, we look forward to it. That's VOA's Larry London. If you want to chat with him, you can always hit him up on VOA underscore music. You can find his show Border Crossings on our website. That's www.voanews.com. If you have any questions or comments for us, you can send us a tweet at VOA underscore IE.
Got my mind on your body and your body on my mind. Got a taste for the cherry, I just need to take a bite.
That is singer Demi Lovato. And that is our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The use of new technologies is a key tool to promote human rights. Though authoritarian governments may seek to control the flow of information online, human rights activists, journalists, and everyday citizens can use technology to disseminate information, to expose corruption and other misdeeds and abuses, and to stay in contact with like-minded individuals. Last year, 41 countries passed or proposed laws or regulations to punish or restrict speech online. More and more governments increasingly blocked access to websites they deemed undesirable and criminalized online speech. In Tajikistan, for example, the government intermittently blocked access to social media sites, including Facebook and YouTube. The Turkish government briefly blocked YouTube and Twitter in the lead-up to local elections. In China, the government continues to block access to websites deemed controversial, such as those discussing Taiwan or the Dalai Lama or even the New York Times. And in December, the Chinese government blocked large numbers of users of Gmail, the world's largest email service provider. Other governments passed new laws to go after activists who use the internet to express themselves. Many who were arrested were sentenced to long prison terms, fines, corporal punishment, and even banishment. In Vietnam, authorities continue to harass, intimidate, arrest, and convict bloggers who express views critical of the government online. But even as governments attempt to control expression and access to information online, human rights activists use new technologies such as satellite imagery, video, and crowdsourcing technologies to gather and disseminate information and to document human rights abuses in areas where security and accessibility are a problem. Today, technology can be used to provide accurate information regarding protests, destruction, and violence in countries around the world. Technology can help increase transparency and fight corruption. So even as authoritarian governments become more aggressive in cracking down on freedom of expression, both online and offline, people in every country become more and more connected and better informed. Banning websites and blocking content are misguided attempts to impose order. Instead, governments must respect fundamental freedoms and promote an open global internet.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.